Welcome to one of Kathy Frey's Motherwise podcasts. Kathy is a best-selling maternity author and award-winning international maternity consultant. During her time as a midwife, she's caught hundreds of babies. So you're in good hands. Enjoy.
Hi everybody, Kathy Frey here from Motherwise. And what I'm going to talk to you today about is the pharmaceutical pain relief available for labour and birth. Being the two particular ones we're going to talk about are nitrous oxide and opioids. So obviously there's epidurals as well, which I'm going to cover off on the next webinar, because there's quite a lot to know and understand about them. So I'd like to go into that one just on its own topic, really. Okay, but firstly, laughing gas or nitrous oxide and opioids. So what are they all about and where are they appropriate? Now, the thing with the three forms of pharmaceutical drug pain relief that are really utilised within the process of labour and birth quite commonly being gasonia, opioids and epidurals. None of them have been created specifically for childbirth. Okay, they are just other pain relief that's used for all other types of necessary things, and so they've been adopted by women for childbirth. And I think that that's really important to realise that there's nothing customised just as being optimally perfect for labour. We're just sort of using the best of what there is available, and you know, considering how far down along with science and discoveries we are, it's kind of mind-blowing, if you ask me, that we haven't come up with something that's absolutely customised to the childbirth. But anyway, we haven't. So maybe we can be sexist and say that's something to do with the fact that medicine has been dominated by men over the centuries. And because women often can't continue in those longer careers, historically, they haven't either been in them at all, or they haven't been able to continue in them because of child rearing and bearing. So anyway, that's another little can of worms. But, you know, I've heard many a woman sort of make that comment that if men had to do it, they would have sorted this out a long time ago. At the same time, you know, obviously, if you've watched much of my work, you'll know that I'm very pro natural labour and normal birth. And that's not because I'm anti-analgesia. It's not at all. It's because I am anti the horrible, traumatic and dramatic complications that some pain relief can do to not just the mother, but to the baby. So that's what I feel that women should really understand what they're consenting to, especially epidurals. But that's another topic on another time. So, okay, so firstly, laughing gas. Now, crazily, that is not available in all countries or Western countries, which is a bit silly, actually. It's certainly, but it is available in a lot, and it is a wonderfully useful product, I have to say. The time that it stays in your system is quite short. You know, you literally just breathe it out. So it takes about a minute for it to build up. So that to its like optimum level. So often when women have made a comment that, oh, they said, oh, the gas was useless, that usually is because they weren't really instructed optimally as to how to use it to get the best benefit from it. So it takes, as I say, a full minute, like 45 seconds closest, but really a full minute is ideal for it to build up to its optimum. So that means that as soon as that woman realizes that she's got a contraction coming on, before it actually really hits, she needs to start sucking on that gas and building it up, building it up, building it up, building it up, until she gets to the sort of peak of her contraction, and then she can take the mouthpiece out of her mouth and just, you know, sigh out the rest of it. So nitrous oxide or laughing gas, well, occasionally you do see women who actually do get the giggles on it, which is really funny to watch. And heck, you know, if they're laughing, they're in a good mood, so everything is fine with the world. But generally speaking, women that are in strong labor aren't giggling on gas. I would say, in my observation, that almost a little bit more the smaller the BMI of the woman combined with the more virginal her brain neurons are, her brain cells, if she's had a bit of partying going on in her life before that labor, she's probably not going to get such a good hit. I mean, it's still worth it. But certainly if she's never taken any substance in her life, then she'll probably get quite a good whack out of it. But look, I mean, that's not a scientific comment. That's just a bit of a, observation. Anyway, so the thing where gas is particularly useful, I have to say, is when the woman is not breathing so rhythmically well with the pain. Because the thing is that with any kind of pain, when labor is included, we tend to hold our breath. But using the gas Enterox means that you have to suck on the mouthpiece, and that's actually really good. You bite down with your tongue and you just and just doing that feels good. It's helpful to get your breathing back into some rhythm instead of type of breathing when somebody's getting a bit stressed and anxious. So sometimes the breathing and the biting down on the mouthpiece is just as beneficial as the gas itself, if not more beneficial. But the thing that's great with it, as I say, is it does wear off very quickly. You know, that's why you need to suck on it, because every 3 minutes or so you're having a contraction and you need to suck on it for another minute because it's already worn off from the last time. The two areas are the commonest ways that it's poorly used and mismanaged and women don't get such a good effect from it. It's either they're just sucking on it continuously. Yeah, don't do that. You should, if you're not having a contraction, you should not be having it. It makes it just not work as well. Or the other thing that women do is they don't do enough breathing at the beginning. They know the contraction's coming, but they wait until the pain is actually there. You know, they've only got 20 or 30 seconds on board and they're in the whacking part of a strong contraction. So starting it early, a good minute, if you can, 45 seconds to a minute before the peak of the contraction. That's the key. Now, a great thing with nitrous is that it's portable. Often it's plugged into, it's like tubed, hardwired, kind of into the wall of a birthing suite room in a hospital. In birthing centres and birth in pool birthing rooms, often it's just in a tank of gas that just can be wheeled around. And I would say probably my most favourite time to have often recommended gas is when the woman is in the pool and she's hitting transition. First time she's hit transition before, she's in that very, very, very strong advanced labor, very strong. And if she can just have that gas plus the pool for that last hour before she's fully dilatated, she's great. It's all good. So managing to save the gas for that, saving the gas to combine it with the pull when she's at transition, when she's at 8 to 9 centimeters, I have to say I've had a lot of success using it that way. Okay. And what you generally find is that with a second or subsequent baby, when the woman have given birth naturally before, they just need everything a whole lot less because they're less anxious and they're less stressed, so they're producing less adrenaline, so they are feeling the sensation of pain in a reduced way. It's still there, but it's because they can sort of meditate through it. And but anyway, so that's a good little overview, I think, about nitrous. So if there are some other, I'm just thinking there's some other times when it can be very beneficial, actually. If you've got a woman who, sounds like I'm talking to another midwife, I don't mean that. If when a woman is got a posterior presenting baby, so head down but facing the wrong way, and she can get some, that can be a real backache labor. And if that woman is starting to get a bit of a premature urge to push, she's feeling a bit pushy, but she's not yet fully dilatated. And that is one of those things that a posterior lie can do, And sometimes that's where gas can be, again, very useful, because you can't suck and push at the same time. So if you go, you can't, because they're two different actions of breathing. So that can be good. And again, you know, during that advanced active transitional phase, you do start to get a bit pushy. And so sucking on the gas and biting down on that mouthpiece and having good inhalations and expirations are really helpful. Okay. All right. So then the other one I wanted to come off today is opioids. All right. So quite commonly when you attend antenatal, prenatal classes, there's a conversation at some point about how pain relief is bad for the baby and it causes respiratory depression. Now, it is specifically what we're talking about is opioids. Okay. Now, depending on where you live, depends on the culture in that country or that hospital as to what opioids are given. And there's quite a lot of sort of variety around the place. Where I did, you know, my practice in New Zealand, we use predominantly pethidine, which is actually pretty conservative in comparison to a lot of countries. Australia uses morphine. England uses diamorphine, which is actually heroin. But any of the opioids are all respiratory depressants. So that is why it's used with caution if there's any suspicion that their baby is likely to be born within the next couple of hours, then it would generally be a drug that would be hesitant or sort of holding back to give it. Because if the baby does come out with respiratory depression from the lingering opioid, I mean, we can counteract that with Narcan, but the problem is that Narcan wears off quicker than the opioid. So you sort of give them the antidote, so to speak, and the reverser, but then it wears off and they need more and it all gets a bit complicated. But there is a couple of times when an opioid is really can be incredibly beneficial. And I would have to say, in the two most, this is my opinion, look, everybody has different opinions, of course, on these things. But in my opinion, the two times when an opioid is quite beneficial in labor is firstly, if the woman is having either an induction that's sort of gone on for two or three nights or a latent labor that's gone on for two or three nights. And sometimes she's not established into strong active labor. She's still effacing. She might be 2 or 3 centimeters dilated, but she's really still not rocking on. She's not doing her 3 to 4 contractions every 10 minutes, all over a minute long that she can't talk through. She's not doing that yet. But she's shattered. She's had broken sleep for 2 or 3 nights, and she's just so tired, and she's teary, and she's over it. And it all kind of can get a bit on top of you. And sometimes, and she can't sleep because she's having this latent contraction, you know, every 6 minutes or whatever it's doing for 20 seconds. And it's like a sleep torture because you can't go to sleep. If it's a mild enough contraction, you can, but it gets to the point where it's not strong active labor, but then it also is not weak enough that you can sleep through it. So you're kind of in this horrible in-between place. And if you've already had a night or two of not much sleep, well, you can kind of lose the plot emotionally. So that's where I think pethidine can be very useful, because if that woman can be sort of knocked out a little bit and just able to have a few hours of some really decent sleep, well, hey presto, voila, she wakes up and often she's actually established into active labor. And she's dilating really well. So that, you know, you see it happen because her stress level goes down because she's asleep. So oxytocin can take over and voila, she starts rocking. She wakes up to rocking and rolling into labor. And so that can have its place. Also, I think with inductions, particularly because you're stuck at a hospital, it can be really, if you're a bit of a light sleeper, it can be very tricky to sleep, you know. Even if you might have been able to sleep at home with that light labor contractions in your own bed with peace and quiet, but trying to do it in a hospital when you're not in your own bed and not got your own pillow, good idea to take your own pillow. And, you know, these are the noise of people, staff coming and going. And so sometimes that can be just really difficult. So that's definitely a place for it, and I think it's really useful. Now, it is an opioid, so that means you do feel a bit stoned. Okay, yes, a bit wasted in the head. And as far as the administration goes of it, it can be given IV or, intravenous or IM, intramuscular. Certainly, the IV will give you an instant hit, but it doesn't last so long. And doesn't last very long at all, really. Whereas the IM, the intramuscular, will last for longer. So generally speaking, what would happen is that unless that woman was stressed out, you would usually give it intramuscularly and, she'll start to get effect and not waiting too long. Then, as I say, the other situation is when there's the other situation, I think it really has its place. And this can be when a woman arrives at birthing suite just so upset. I mean, like sometimes, particularly I think women where they have not had a lot of antenatal education, they don't really know what's ahead of them. And then suddenly they're having these contractions and they just completely freak out and they arrive at birthing suite. Screaming their heads off, and everybody's thinking, oh my gosh, they're just about to have their baby. And then an internal check is done, and oh my goodness, she's only 3 centimeters. She's a long time away from having her baby. She just hasn't coped very well. And it's usually down to education. It's not personality, it's actually just lack of education. Because you give any woman enough education of advanced knowledge on childbirth, and she'll cope. That's my opinion. Anyway, so in that situation, when clearly that baby's not going to get born within the next couple of hours, or very, very highly unlikely, and if we can just give her a respite, let her dial it down a bit, catch her breath, sort of feel like she can regain some control of herself, of her body, of what's going on, so she can have a conversation and she can shut her eyes and have a little bit of rest, and hey presto, look, she just feels a million times better and everything's... She's got over that hump, And yeah, so that's where those two really can come in and can be very, very useful. So the other one I'm going to talk about next time is epidurals. But as I say, this time I just wanted to talk to you about opioids and nitrous oxide or laughing gas. So if you get given an option, if somebody sort of says to you with an opioid, would you like it IV for quicker or IM into your muscle for longer, go for the longer because it lasts longer. But that's really all to tell you. Now, if you did have an opioid and your baby was actually born quite quickly, because it can happen, as soon as that woman relaxes, then her cervix can quickly dilate and hey presto, we've got a baby under 2 hours. I mean, it can happen. Even though we know that it's a respiratory depressant for the baby, I just want to reassure you that it's still pretty rare that we actually see a baby that truly needs Narcan. Yes, it can happen, but I just know that it's, even when the mother's giving birth not soon after having it, most of those babies are absolutely fine. Okay, so I don't want you stressing out and freaking out. And hopefully that all makes a lot of sense. And everybody's going to have a lovely rest of their week, rest of their day. And we will talk to you next time. Bye, everybody.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast today. Visit kathyfrey.com for lots more free maternity information and downloads. Plus, you can order copies of Kathy's books, browse through her top recommended motherhood products, and check out her popular support package options. kathyfrey.com.